This is a Sean Kelly on Movies interview with Academy Award winning director Adam Elliott on Memoir of a Snail. Like and subscribe for more content like this.
Maybe you could begin by talking about like the length it takes to animate one of your films, because Memoir of a Snail is coming like 15 years after Marion Mack.
Yes, well, Sean, I always apologize up front for it. You know, my film's taking so long. It wasn't meant to take 15 years, but, you know, life kept getting in the way, and I won't go into all the details. But, you know, there are days I wished I'd chosen a quicker art form, a less expensive art form. But as my mum said, good things take time. I've probably only got a few films left, so I've got to really hurry along, don't I?
Yeah, could you talk a bit about your plan for a trilogy of trilogies?
Sure. Well, look, it was a very pretentious idea I had 28 years ago when I was studying at film school in Melbourne, Australia. Mm-hmm. And I thought, what if I do three short shorts, three long shorts, and three features? That'll fill up my life, and then I can die. never thinking that I would actually achieve that, but I'm up to number 7 now, so yeah, I've only got 2 left.
So how long do you think it would take to get the other 2 made?
Well, I'm 52, and hopefully the next film won't take, you know, this one took 8 years from script to screen. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping it'll only take 3 to 5. Mm-hmm.
So what was the inspiration for the story of Memoir of a Snail?
Yeah, well, look, about 8 years ago, my father passed away and left behind a big hoard of stuff that my siblings and I had to trawl through. And I became fascinated with why, as human beings, do we collect stuff? Why do we fill our homes with things we don't need? So I started to read a lot of books into the psychology of extreme hoarding. And the more research I did, the more I found that extreme hoarders have usually suffered a lot of trauma in their life, mm-hmm. usually to do with the loss of a child or a sibling or a twin, and that the hoarding becomes this type of coping mechanism. So it was that sort of idea. And also I came across some notes I'd made about a friend of mine who was born with a cleft palate. I was going to make a short film about her life. Mm-hmm. And she'd had a lot of suffering as a child, a lot of operations on her mouth, had been bullied and teased a lot as a child. And so I found that interesting. So there's sort of 2 ideas sort of merged together, and over 3 years I wrote 16 drafts of the script, and this is what I came up with.
I noticed your films have a pattern of like neurodiverse protagonists, of Max having Asperger's, of Grace suffering from angst and anxiety. So is this a conscious decision on your part?
Well, conscious and unconscious, because, you know, I just write about the people around me, and a lot of them just happen to be, you know, people on the spectrum or people who are neurodivergent or people who've got, Alzheimer's or Tourette's. You know, I think everybody has something about themselves they at times wish they didn't have. And I think we all are imperfect, if you want to look at it that way. I certainly don't ever use the word disability I don't see my characters as having disabilities. It's more about the exploration of this stupid desire we all have to be perfect, and that we should really learn to embrace our imperfections as well as other people's. I am certainly fascinated by the human mind. I've read a lot mm-hmm. of books by Oliver Sacks. I always used to love reading his books into mm-hmm. mental illness, what makes us different, what makes us the same, the human condition. I've always had the fascination with the human mind, but I've also had a fascination with death. I love that. I love peculiar deaths, funny deaths. I've always loved the work of Woody Allen. I know he's not in favor anymore, but I've always loved his obsession with death, and I think I have an obsession with death too.
Well, that kind of brings me to my next question, is that your films are a good example of animation not being purely a children's medium. So what type of audience are you aiming for with Memoir of a Snail?
Oh, great question. Yeah, well, look, I've never seen, and nor do others see animation as a genre necessarily. It's it's a medium, and it's a wonderful vehicle to tell any story you want. Mm-hmm. And my films are certainly not for little kids. They're for for teenagers and up. And, I have a very challenging subject matter at times in my films. Mm-hmm. I mean, I try and make them as funny as possible as well, but I don't want to offend the audience, but I certainly want to have material that is thought-provoking. Mm-hmm. And look, life is really dark at times for all of us, and mm-hmm. And I'm trying to just mirror life, and no one's life is ever completely grim. There's always something that brings light and hope and levity. They're reflections of all our lives, but a lot of the characters are extensions of myself, but there's a lot of myself in the characters and a lot of my personal experience. But they're certainly works of fiction. They're not documentaries. And mm-hmm. I love that adage, never let the truth get in the way of a good story.
So what do you look for when you're casting your films?
Good question. Now, it's a very intuitive gut feeling I have when I'm casting. I always look for authenticity and an actor who doesn't have to put on a voice or a character voice. I'm always after just their natural speaking voice and a performance that's just very real. So I'm very conscious too of not having too many Australian actors whose accent is too thick and broad. So it's important that audiences understand what they're saying, because the Australian accent can be a bit hard to understand at times. I certainly, of course, want actors who've got an international profile. That really helps as well. But, I'm always drawn to actors that other actors really admire and just have that indescribable essence of, and that genius. And I think Sarah Snook definitely is one of those actors. Mm-hmm. Just has this incredible ease with performing, and yet comes up with stuff that is so layered and dimensional. I certainly it's a real challenge to find the actors you want. It's a real challenge to be able to then get them on board and penetrate through the shield of their agents. But again, I'm lucky. A lot of these actors are Melburnians where I live, and it was easier to access them.
How did you get Nick Cave to do one line pretty much?
Well, Nick Cave was the last minute, not a last minute decision, but we didn't have to cast him early. We were able to cast his character later on. And I, went through a whole list of other celebrities and musicians and sports people, and mm-hmm. and then really Nick Cave just ticked all the boxes. He, he gets to read a poem, and he's a poet himself, of course. He just has that beautiful voice. And he wanted to do a voice, and I said, no, I just want you to be Nick Cave. I don't want you to be anything but Nick Cave. Yeah, we were so thrilled and delighted that he came on board.
Okay, well, kind of like going to now ask you a question about like a part-time Torontonian, Guillermo del Toro, who's a huge supporter of stop-motion animation. And I was wondering if you were inspired when he won the Oscar a couple years ago for his Pinocchio film. And do you have any hopes that Memoir of a Snail will bring you back to the Oscars 20 years after winning for Harvey Crumpet?
Well, your guess is as good as mine. Guillermo, of course, has really done wonderful things for the stop motion community. He's really brought the art form into the forefront, as well as Wes Anderson and Henry Selick and mm-hmm. and Travis Knight at Leica. So mm-hmm. I think stop motion is going through a great renaissance at the moment. And I think particularly too with the advent of AI, and there's so much CGI animation out there. And I think audiences are really enjoying stop motion films at the moment, because they know that what they're looking at is real and made by human beings. And I think the art form is really appreciated at the moment. Who knows what the future holds? I mean, AI could destroy us all. I hope not. I think, again, things that are handmade will always be appreciated. And I think, AI will find its place, but I think so will things that are handcrafted.
Okay, well, that's my time. So thanks.
Thank you. Such great questions too. Thanks very much, Sean. They're great.